This is the London FinTech Podcast, brought to you by your host, Mike Ballerman, bridging the worlds of suits and t-shirts, of finance and technology, bringing you insights, stories, and inspiration from the golden age of opportunity and innovation happening in London right now.
Hi, this is Mike Ballerman, and this is London FinTech Podcast, episode 20. I'm delighted to be joined on the show today by Conrad Ford, CEO of Funding Options. As you all may have noticed, in the UK right now, the government isn't so much blowing in the sails of the P2P industry as hiring those huge old industrial turbine fans from Alfred Hitchcock films. Of course, as all senior civil servants know, it's one thing to have a political intention, and it's quite another to convert that into the required details of policy implementation. As I've said before, I've been more than pleasantly surprised by both the intentions and also the close consultation with industry over getting it right. Conrad and a few other key players have been busy catching taxis to and from Westminster, helping the government machinery flesh all this out. In essence, the very prosaically named UK SME Finance Referral Scheme basically means that soon banks won't be able to tell SMEs to F off anymore, which is basically the reality behind their prosaic and often very slow loan application declined formula. Rather, they will soon have to on-refer to a wide variety of alternative finance providers, including P2P, but also others. RBS, a big player in the SME market, has already announced a deal with Funding Circle and Ascent Capital in this context. More generally, there's an expectation of an online portal slash portals to show SMEs the options. Conrad is an ideal person to guide us through this maze of policy to practicality, as not only has he been involved in the process, but his company, Funding Options, is one of the leading contenders to be on a shortlist of those able to do the job. If you go to their site, you'll get a nice simple explanation of what they do. We'll hear more later, but to give you a feel, I quote, "Business finance made easy. Our award-winning scheme scans the market to find the options that best suit your needs. It takes minutes, there's no obligation, and it's free to use." Sounds great, so let's get on with the show. Hi, Conrad. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Mike. It's great to be here.
Going back to your background, Conrad, you've got an interesting background in that you both worked in large banking organisations, so you've got some solid FS background, as well as in startups and all sorts of indie things. And then a long time before that, I noticed via my friends at LinkedIn that you did social political sciences at Cambridge, which fascinates me enormously because if that's actually true, you're the first person I ever met that did SBS and's got a real job ever since. Don't feel defensive at this point.
So my story is actually that I spent a lot of time after university not doing much at all, actually.
That's generally what SBS lines up people for. Sort of, SBS, for those people who don't know it, was certainly in my day, it may have changed in yours, was a bunch of lefties moaning about the fact that Marx is dead and all this kind of stuff. But maybe I've got a sort of bit of a biased opinion.
So back in the day, the joke at university was that if you'd done my degree, then what you'd say to someone with a job would be, do you want fries with that?
And I think
the world hasn't changed much. So I spent a number of years
So you did ask me whether I want biscuits with my coffee this morning, so you've still got some of your heritage.
I'm well trained. So I spent a number of years not doing much, actually, travelling a lot, and I got pulled into a room once by a fearsome auntie who told me that I need to get a proper job. I think this was around the age of 26.
All right. And I need to get a proper job around the age of 53, actually, but never mind.
So I decided I was going to qualify as an accountant, and the only place where I could actually maintain my salary and do so was to join an investment bank. So that's how actually I ended up by accident in financial services.
Oh, okay. And so in terms of your financial services bit, you were at the likes of UBS and Barclays and other sort of solid.
Yeah, I was at UBS Investment Bank at the time. They called themselves Warburgs, which is the genesis. Really, probably the most important move I made in my career was I joined a strategy team within UBS towards the end of my time there. And from there, I moved straight into the group strategy team at Barclays, where I spent a number of years. And that was a really exciting and interesting job. You know, we did some really good things. I mean, they bought a bank in South Africa, and I spent a few months down there, for example. So we did some really interesting things there. And that was really the genesis of me developing an intellectual interest in financial services, rather than seeing it as a good way to earn a decent salary.
Yes. Well, we all need to start off with one thing and then we find the niche. I mean, Barclays strategy, I've met one or two people over the years who came from that and they were quite good people. And I say that as not all strategy departments ever ended up sort of doing anything particularly practical. A number of strategy departments that get formed to sort of produce lots of internal documents and sort of float away. So I think Barclays was one of the finest strategy departments in terms of actually making a change in the real world.
I think that's a fair comment, and it was genuinely a very effective team. And I think one of the drivers behind that was there was very much a mix of strategy consulting firms that we hired from. So I was almost unique in not having the background being at a McKinsey or a Booz Allen or a Marathon or whoever it may be. Barclays tended to have people from all sorts of firms, and some of them are very operational, some of them are execution focused, some are very strategic. So what didn't happen is us disappearing down a rabbit hole of being very, very high level and not actually making an impact.
Yes, not actually sort of changing the world. So anyway, you've got quite a broad background, and then you've spent a lot of time, as I say, on taxis going to and from Westminster and helping with this very prosaically named UK SME referral scheme. And as I was implying in the introduction, in principle, it's very simple. So please correct me if I'm wrong, but in principle, at some point in time, and I don't know when, banks basically won't be able to say bugger off, or no, we're not lending you something. They'll have to say bugger off to this place, and this place will actually help you. And again, just off the top of my head, just on my sort of usual deep research by reading Twitter every now and then, I saw some stat recently which said that, I don't know, 70% of SMEs get turned down for loan referrals and 40% just give up completely, never even go to a second bank, let alone do anything sophisticated. And presumably this is something that the Treasury et al. Have identified as a bit of a friction point in the UK economy, because it's not a very American thing, is it? If at first you don't succeed, give up because it's easier. In the States and in San Francisco, people will try 500 times.
I think that's spot on, because if you move back 5 years, there was a lot of bluster around SME finance. Bank bashing was all the norm. Since then, the government's been running a quarterly survey of, believe it or not, 5,000 small businesses every quarter. Wow. So we now have a huge universe and consistent universe of data that tells us what's really happening in SME lending. And actually, many of the critiques of the banks have been wrong. But the big frustration point for the government is that there is a meaningful proportion of SMEs that either what they call discouraged demand, who just don't think it's worth trying because there's a perception that the banks will not engage with them. And then probably the most frustrating of all is the businesses that give up. And the theory here is that small businesses, because we have such a large dominant banks, they don't really know what the other options in the market are. They find it very difficult to access them. And as such, once they've got no from their bank, that's it. They assume that if the bank said no, there aren't options out there. And that is the great frustration for the government, because you're talking about hundreds of thousands of small firms, many of which, if they did actually raise finance and they could raise finance, would actually be investing in creating new jobs and growth. That's why the government's decided that they want to intervene in this market.
And just on this poor awareness point, I mean, it's not just SMEs who are sort of very busy doing something else in Scunthorpe other than scanning the fintech press. I mean, when I looked at your site recently, even folks like me who've spent 30 years in the city and constantly immersed themselves the last sort of 6 to 9 months in fintech, even I'm not aware of all the various options that are out there. So it's quite a challenging information gap.
It absolutely is. And I would say that the epicentre of this problem is working capital, which in volume terms is about half of all finance needs for businesses. And the reason it's working capital is because in the other major areas of finance, which are property and asset finance, it's pretty obvious what you need. If you want to buy a commercial property, you need a mortgage. If you want to buy a truck, then you need hire purchase or lease. So in those areas, they are relatively well served, particularly by the intermediary community, by traditional brokers. But in working capital, what you need is cash. And the great challenge to solve there is, what is it in your business? Is it your cash flow? Is it your transactional data? Is it your card payment terms or your invoices? Your assets, your house, somewhere, what is it in your business or your personal circumstances that give you something against which someone is willing to lend? And that is the great challenge to solve, because there are literally dozens of ways of funding working capital. And frankly, we still learn them. We've been in the market now for a few years. We still learn them. We're still learning this market. So if you're working 60 hours a week as a small business and you're not a finance professional, you don't have a hope of accessing those options.
No, absolutely. And we'll come on to that later, because I was certainly very impressed looking at your site in terms of some of the case studies of actually how you've helped businesses. We'll come on to that in the end. But as you say, if you're working 60 hours a week, you don't have a spare time to do a PhD in working capital things. I mean, I wonder where this working capital problem comes from, and I wonder how it was kind of solved in the past. And I do recall a long time ago the fact that when some Conservative government was around, that they were going to introduce some scheme whereby if you sold your milk to Tesco's, Tesco's by law had to pay you within 30 days rather than 3,000 days or whatever it is. I just use that as a random thing. I don't actually know Tesco's payment terms, but they have been being beaten up about this recently.
Far worse than that.
Oh, right, OK, yes, 3 million days later. And anyway, so Heseltine stopped that, who was, you know, big bad capitalist, going back to your SBS Reds on the Beds phrase. And more recently, I saw that there was something up before Parliament one way or another, and again that an MP, Conservative MP, put their foot through the boat in terms of basically saying to big companies, thou shalt not shaft small companies when thou deals with them. So maybe more fundamentally, but by the sound of it, more politically difficult to change. How much of this working capital arises from the fact that if you're a small company, which you are compared to the Tesco's or UBS's of the world, you end up having to deal with big companies, and those big companies basically see you as a free source of finance. Are they just passing their financing down to the small SMEs who then have got to try and get it somewhere?
Well, they absolutely are, but I think that probably only accounts for, you know, maximum a quarter of the problem, and the reason for that is simple mathematics. Only about half of UK businesses are B2B. So if you're B2C, if you're selling to consumers, you know, you're not getting money from Tesco. So for half of businesses, it's irrelevant. And then for the half that are B2B, only a fraction of those will actually be dealing with large companies or the government. Government these days do pay on time. If you get your valid invoices in, they will pay you on time. So although a lot is made of late payments, and it is a major, major issue for a large number of firms, and you're probably talking about 500,000 firms, for which it's the number one problem of a universe of 5 million.
Right. I always love these shows because I end up speaking to somebody who knows what they're talking about, which obviously I don't. So that's the background to it then. And then in terms of this new legislation, what was the sort of genesis of that? Roughly when did the government or whoever it was kind of wake up and think, oh, let's try and solve this problem somehow?
Well, there's lots of people who claim credit.
1847.
There's lots of people who bombastically claim credit.
You can be one of them if you like.
Well, I am.
So, he says bombastically.
Yeah. A number of people claim it was their idea. A number of people claim they had a word.
Success has many fathers, failure is an orphan.
Exactly. Many people, you know, influence Vince Cable, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. My own little tiny, tiny part in this story is, and believe it or not, I actually had a meeting with Mark Carney shortly after he took over as Bank of England.
Oh, right, as one does.
And I won't go into how that happened. It was one of those just strange accidents of fate. And I subsequently wrote to him and I did get a response. So that was my tiny, tiny part in this. But actually, at the heart of this was a growing understanding at the government level that they were attacking the wrong problem.
Right. So which problem were they attacking then?
So the problem they were attacking was a belief there was a lack of supply of finance to SMEs.
Oh, okay. And one sees that in the press quite a bit, you know, not enough lending going on.
Yeah. So that is a fundamental misconception. And how that's followed through in government policy has been lots and lots of government money going into lenders to then go into the rest of the world. On the one hand, of course, you've got the schemes to support bank lending, like the funding for lending, which I don't claim to understand in any detail, by the way. But also you've got the British Business Bank putting a lot of money into alternate lenders like peer-to-peer.
Yeah, who are already doing well enough, they've turned over $500 million, but the taxpayers put money into some bank to stick more through them.
Most importantly, there is not a supply-side problem in the peer-to-peer market. There is enough money out there, and most importantly, most of the money coming to lend to small businesses is not from peer-to-peer, it's coming from institutions who are desperate for yield.
Just press pause on that, because I think that there is a big misconception going around, or maybe misconception is the wrong phrase. There's quite a distortion in the reporting of these things, and understandably, there's a lot of excitement around peer-to-peer that gets a lot of press attention, but what doesn't get press attention is this institutional thing you're talking about. What does that mean in practice? Are pension funds busy trying to lend to SMEs?
Well, to put that in context, there is a couple of challenger banks, for example, that set up operations to lend to businesses about the same time as the peer-to-business lending industry came about, and they've individually both lent more than the entire peer-to-business lending.
Okay, which ones are those? You mean not Metro Bank, because there's High Street Bank, Virgin Money.
Actually, Metro do SME lending. I'm talking specifically about Aldermore, which is backed by Anacap, a private equity firm. And I believe that they're looking at floating all a part of the business at the moment. And then you've got Shawbrook, which is, again, backed by private
equity. So that's interesting. Just coming back to my ignorance, which is vast and infinite. We can't keep coming back to it, otherwise the podcast will never terminate. But I wasn't until recently aware of those two. And again, I don't want to use myself as a metric, but quotes, if even I don't know about it, then it's not surprising if you're in Halifax that you haven't come across them, maybe.
I'm not for a second saying a negative point about the peer-to-peer segment. The peer-to-peer segment has got a lot of buzz.
It's just there are other segments that people aren't as aware of.
My concern here is essentially that there is a lack of understanding that most of the money that's coming to lend to SMEs is institutional money. And 2 or 3 years ago, it was all about American money coming over here desperately seeking yield. What I'm hearing is that at the moment, Asia Pacific is where a lot of money is coming from. So there are people queuing up to lend to UK SMEs because they are desperately want yield.
I think I'll have to tweet that next week. There are people queuing up to lend to SMEs because that is not generally the perception, is it? You know, bloody banks are not lending, regulators are coming back.
I'm not going to get into whether the banks are or aren't. It's a very nuanced question, but the reality is lots of people do want to lend because you have the opportunity to achieve a 10% yield, sometimes as high as 20% yield, on relatively low risk. Most of this lending is secured in some way. So there is money queuing up. The great challenge that's faced by the alternative lending segment, and I'm talking generally challenger banks, institutional money peer-to-peer, is access to customers and awareness. And that is why at the government level, they've begun to focus in on this specific issue, which is how do you better connect those businesses that don't fit bank lending with that segment? And to achieve that aim, you need to be introducing to the whole market and doing it in quite an elegant way, because it's very analogous to a dating site, you know. Out there in London, there's a million hot singles. Well, how do we find the three that I should have dinner with?
No, how do we find the three I should have dinner with? Because you're a married man.
Good point.
We'll come back to financing. Right? We can talk about that off the record. It's been a long-standing problem of mine, of filtering all these millions of women out.
Fine. So it's a very similar problem. There are literally hundreds of SME lenders in the UK. There are literally hundreds, and there's dozens of products. So actually, the challenge is how do you get the right money to the right people? Because the challenges of, say, a hairdresser looking for 30 grand to do a refurbishment, the type of finance provider for them is fundamentally different to the one of a haulier that's buying their fifth truck. These are fundamentally different businesses. How you finance them is fundamentally different.
So just pressing pause, so I understand that bit. And then my understanding has always been that, so deus ex machina on that, in one mighty band they're free, you have an intelligent portal. And people go there, and that sorts all those problems out. Now, of course, as you will know, as a person running what in my simple language is an intelligent portal, it's easier said than done. But is that the basic philosophy, that this is a complicated issue? But if you get this right portal right, the portal will sort it out?
Yeah, I mean, we quietly launched our technology to do this last month. So we have it running through a couple of our low-volume channels, and we're about to more publicly launch. So we have what we like to think is very sophisticated, and probably, I think, far and away the most sophisticated matching algorithms. So how we attack this problem? Well, again, I'd come back to the dating analysis. That is the problem you're trying to solve. So our pitch line really is a few minutes of your time on our platform will save you a few hours or even a few days, because what you won't be doing is wasting your time with lenders that don't fit. Now, we're very proud of our matching technology, and actually the way I demonstrate it when I speak to lenders is I say, go on and pretend to be your perfect prospect. And if they're already on the platform, almost without fail, they will come out as the top ranking match. And more compellingly, if they're not on the platform, their number one competitor will. So we think this is a matchmaking problem. How our matchmaking works, there's really three core components. The first one is based on qualitative questions and quantitative questions that the business answers about their circumstances and needs. So for example, how much finance they need is one of them, or what their monthly turnover. We have a bell curve of suitability for a given lender. And so somebody like Funding Circle, their sweet spot would be in the region of 100K, but they might also be willing to do a million or 5K. So we put a bell curve of suitability at the back end. Secondly, we also go to credit reference agency data and do background filtering. So for example, a Funding Circle will only lend if you've got 2 years filed accounts. We don't need to ask that question to an SME, and most SMEs probably couldn't answer that question. We just filter out the ones who don't have 2 years filed accounts without telling them. And then finally, ratio-based matching. What that is looking at, for example, the relationship between their turnover and the finance requirement.
So for example, I'm the London FinTech podcast. I want some new, bigger, better, even more expensive microphones, but my turnover is $0 per month. And you'll filter that out somehow?
you'd get filtered out a lot earlier than that.
Oh dear.
but yeah, I mean, to give a real example, if you're a small business with a turnover of 100K a month, so you've got £1 million turnover, if you're looking for 50K of working capital, then short-term lenders that do sort of cash flow-based unsecured lending will be happy to lend to you. But if you're looking for a couple of hundred grand, they're not going to do that. You're going to need to find an asset in the business or an asset on your home or something to actually secure against.
Okay, so just pressing pause on that one, because it's interesting about SMEs, because in the past, we all kind of knew what SMEs were. They were small companies. And then over the last 10 or 20 years, lots of people have ended up kind of working for themselves through little companies, which are, in my case, if you want to pay me some money, it goes through Penates Risk Limited, which is a company of mine I've been had for 17 years. So there are lots of companies around that perhaps aren't SMEs as such. So where does an SME start? So I'm not an SME in your context, am I?
Well, you absolutely are.
Am I? Okay, so SMEs goes down to somebody who's just making 10 grand per annum or something like that.
Yeah, so the government scheme is intended to cover all the way from zero and, in fact, startup.
Oh, that includes me then, after all.
All the way up to £25 million.
Right.
And the specific example you gave, what I call a freelancer or a contractor, where you're not going to have physical assets, you know, other than this microphone. You're not going to have physical assets. You're going to have invoices. You're going to be doing consulting work. There are people who are in there financing that area, but actually most of that finance comes through the payroll companies. So payroll companies who run umbrella service companies, they tend to offer factoring type products through their service.
Right, gotcha.
So that's actually a reasonably well-served market, but very, very niche.
Okay, but again, it's a good example. All these little stories are good examples of actually how it's quite a very complex landscape that until you actually sit down and start discussing it, you don't realise how much is actually on this table called alternative finance.
Yeah, there's an extraordinary diversity, and actually probably other than the US, I would imagine we have the most diversity in the world in terms of provision of finance products. The great challenge, unfortunately, of course, is they can't get to the right customers.
Yeah, but this is the matching. But in simple terms, I like what you're saying, simple sort of kind of whiteboard terms, you draw this black box in the middle called dating problem, and then it's kind of solved. But the black box then needs to solve it, because then these things can be connected up. So what kind of timescale is this happening over? Because I lose track of whether it's going to happen this year, next year, or next millennium.
So the legislation itself, so this is a law, this is not regulation, this is a law. The legislation itself is passing through Parliament as we speak and is expected to get royal assent, I believe is the phrase, in the next month. So it's imminent. And it has cross-party support, this one. Right. So, you know, barring the SNP ending up in power, we can take it as read that this one will survive the election. So the legislation itself, the draft regulations, which are the instruments through which ministers will actually implement, we've already seen those, they're already published. So this is all very much in progress. I think what we've seen as a potential provider of platform services to deliver this is that running towards the end of 2014, it was seen as a 2015 issue. And suddenly we've seen a plethora of workshops, beauty parades, meet and greets. Everything's really kicking off now because there's a sudden realisation this is a 2015 project.
The next year bucket has become this year bucket.
Exactly, yeah. And actually, a couple of comments I'd make around the major banks is that when you read about this scheme in the press, it's presented as the banks are being forced to do this. In reality, actually, they are generally, honestly, quite positive about referring the customers they don't want to lend to alternate lenders.
Because it will strengthen their customer, presumably.
It strengthens your customer. And if you're not referring to a current account provider, you're not going to lose the relationship.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And actually, the banks know, particularly the relationship directors who actually own the relationship, they know that eventually when that business is ready for bank finance, they will be dramatically cheaper and they will take out the alternative finance.
Yeah.
So for all of those reasons, there is actually a lot more positivity about this scheme than is presented. The press like to present it as a battle with the banks. And ironically, one of the reasons the banks don't actively do this right now is because in the current regulatory environment, they may be held accountable for the consequences of that referral.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So they, from their perspective, need the kind of government cover, which is, let's say that you guys are fortunate and you are the one, and in a year's time everything's going through you guys.
Or one of the ones.
Well, let's come back to how many they will need. If you're one of the ones and I'm a bank, I know that if I refer it to you because the government says you're okay, I can never be done for doing the wrong thing, whereas otherwise it turns into some nightmare thing, which is I make a choice and then someone says, oh, that was a poor advice, you know, latest mis-selling or misdirecting or some bullshit like that, which is just used to more beat them up. So come back to the portals bit, then we haven't touched on that. So I said a portal in the first instance, but is it going down the portal route or the portals, and how many portals will there be? Are they verticals or horizontals? Or?
Well, I think it's a great unknown. There's a number of organisations that are talking about themselves. We're one of them, by the way. They're talking about themselves as if they intend to be a portal. One of the things that interests me is there's actually some very different animals out there. And we're a hardcore fintech company, so we're talking about, you know, schemers, APIs, all of the stuff that you'd expect fintech companies to talk about.
Yep.
Some people seem to be building effectively knowledge sites, so content sites around SME lending, and also talk about themselves as being portals. So I think we're at a stage now where nobody quite understands what a portal looks like.
Yes.
I anticipate that we'll have expressions of interest and then shortlisting and then a process that will look very similar to a government procurement process. But all of that is expected to happen in the next few months.
Right, and will probably take a few months if it's a government procurement process traditionally. But from what you're saying then, the key things there, like most of these procurement processes, is to be asking the right question in the first place. Because if you decide you want an encyclopedia of how to raise finance, that's one thing. If you decide you want a more tech solution, which is a place that people go to put in, I want 100 grand, and they get a few recommendations, that's another, isn't it? And worst of all, if you haven't decided between that or that or any other models, and you're pretty vague about what you want, the process itself is going to be a bit confusing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons the government's kind of opened this up as a problem and looked to the private sector is a belief that we needed to give innovation to actually solve this problem.
Yes.
There have been attempts to create filtering sites. So there's bank ones, there's government ones,
yes.
And all of them are actually relatively inelegant and very, very brutal. So,
yes.
You know, to use a real example, if a lender says we'll lend between 10k and a million, it'll be a yes if it's anywhere in that huge boundary. Whereas, you know, to actually filter through the market, you need to be much more nuanced. A good commercial finance broker has an extraordinarily good understanding of the lending criteria of the lenders they introduce to.
Yes, that's a very interesting question. So, as I've mentioned before, one of my hobby horses is this idea that the internet disintermediates, and at some level it kind of does, but actually it always ends up re-intermediating. And then you've always got this tension between, on the one hand, human beings who've got a whole bunch of contacts and a bunch of experience and they kind of do it in a very just old-fashioned brokery way. And on the other hand, you've got this kind of tech solution where you've got a clever piece of IT and it does it. And actually, rarely these days can you be an old-fashioned broker with a Rolodex, or rarely can you be like 100% without needing some human being? So what's the spectrum of solutions there?
What I would anticipate will happen is that certain areas of the market will be unchanged by the internet, will barely change by the internet in 3 to 4 years.
Like Lloyd's insurance market being one of them.
Whereas, you know, smaller ticket, working capital, high volume stuff, I would expect in commercial finance certainly to be attacked online.
Okay, so that's one way of splitting up the portals then, isn't it? In that kind of way, which is different types. Yeah. You know, here is a mortgage broker, here is an online.
I actually think the government is taking the right approach here, which is basically say to the private sector, how would you solve this problem? And then see what types of options and innovations come out of that. And then from there, actually make a decision onto which ones to actually give the light of day.
Yes, it's not really helping my cynicism at all about sort of government. Everyone says they're doing a good job, and by all accounts, they are. So what do you think are the sort of biggest challenges that we've got out there? We've mentioned all these open issues, which will be resolved one way or another. But let's fast forward a year and say it's working, whatever the it then is. You know, what would the issues be in a year's time, do you imagine now? And by the sound of it, it should work okay, because whatever there is must be better than sort of 40% of the people just giving up.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, in the context of the fact that however the press may present this, there isn't the negativity from the major banks about this that is often present in the language around the scheme. So my comment on that would be, what desperately needs to happen is we need to have organisations chosen to do this that are technically very, very strong. And the reason for that is because, you know, if one fails in terms of information security or any of those things that really matter, then the whole scheme is discredited. It's really important. From then onwards, it becomes a matter of execution, you know, executing well and actually building positive relationships with the bank. So this is something that they actively want to engage with.
And how does it work? I mentioned before the RBS, which has been high profile. So they've picked a couple of providers themselves. So how is it currently envisaged that it will work? If I am in another bank, am I allowed to say, OK, I'll do what the government says and give it to the portals, or I've got this kind of get out, which is as long as I do a sort of side deal with another P2P or another Aldermore or Shawbrook or something like that, then I'm OK. How's that currently working?
So the government has taken what I think is the right view, which is that where you have existing successful relationships, whether it's with directly with lenders or with local brokers or with local business support organisations, which there's many around the country, then these are not expected to be supplanted by the government scheme. So in other words, the government wants this to be an additional string in the bow. So I'm not sure what impact it would have for a direct referral relationship between a bank and one lender. But what absolutely won't happen is replacement, for example, of a referral scheme at a local level that says that we refer all our rejects to this business support organisation.
Well, that's what I was kind of thinking, because it does undermine it. Now, you know, Funding Circle and Assets Capital are very good businesses. I've got a lot of respect for, but in a sense, you're not really solving the problem. If you go to RBS and in the past they say yes or no, you've approached one, the new thing that they're going to do, you will end up approaching three, and three is three times better than one, but it's not the kind of like the 1,000 you might find through a portal, is it?
Yeah, well, look, if that doesn't work, then they'll be required to use a portal.
Right, so, I see.
It's complementary.
Complementary, not alternative.
To my mind, it's only a fraction of the time that if a term lender has rejected a term loan, it's only a fraction of the time that it will make sense to refer to another term lender. So the success in this market of getting small businesses finance is opening up a diversity of different ways of lending. I've been very positive about the banks. So I'm going to make a negative comment now. The banks tend to think about every lending situation to a business as a term loan. So, you know, your freezer's broken down, you need to urgently replace it. They ask you for a business plan and management accounts. Well, guess what? There are many lenders out there who don't care whether you've got a business plan or management accounts because they're looking at your bank statements, they're looking at your invoices, they're looking at your card terminal receipts.
It's more real-time data than some
documents. Found ways to lend without a business plan and management accounts. Yeah. So if I have one critique of the banks is a lack of self-awareness that they don't understand that other people have innovated other ways to lend. So for me, it's opening up that diversity. So, you know, we ask people if they've got a business plan. It's not a problem if they don't. And frankly, I would be shocked if they then spent $5,000 with an accountant writing a business plan when somebody's willing to lend them money on cash flow.
So I think it's just a question that sort of large organisations of all types are oil tankers. The world's changing fairly rapidly. There's lots of new, clever, smarter ways of doing credit analysis coming in, and they haven't quite sort of caught up and implemented them. So that's very helpful. I've got a much clearer understanding now, and I'm sure the listeners have, about the UK SME referral scheme. Drawing a line under that, because that was your kind of specialist topic, funding options is a business today. So you've launched, you've got customers, you do stuff. So what does funding options do? You know, for the millions of people listening, some of them are going to be SMEs and some of them are going to need money and not have much time sorted out. What can you do for them?
Well, we effectively try and be a one-stop shop for all the different products and providers in alternative finance. As at now, a good headline stat is last year we referred small firms to more than 50 alternative finance providers. Now, there's two ways of looking at that. On the one hand, I think that's unprecedented. I don't think there's anyone even close. because most of the brokerage market is product focused. So you have commercial mortgage specialists or asset finance specialists. So on the one hand, it's an amazing number. On the other hand, actually, it's probably only about 20% of the entire alternative finance market. So on the other hand, it feels like we've barely scratched the surface because we've only met, you know, one in five of all the lenders out there.
However, you've scratched the surface deeper than anyone else has scratched the surface.
Absolutely, yeah. So really, the heart of Funny Options is it's a one-stop shop for alternative business finance. We're the people you go to if the bank says no. And what we're very proud of is the fact that there's multiple situations where people have been to other brokers who've kind of said it can't be done. Because we know different products and providers, we can get it done.
Just on that, so what's your model? So I can see that's a very good thing to do for the world, just like doing a London FinTech podcast. And my model is I make no money and I eat grass in the evening. So there's a deficiency in my model. Presumably, you being a better businessman have worked this out and you've got a way of monetizing helping the world.
Well, interesting. That's the kind of question I get asked by my investors too.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, they want money as well. Goodness me, these capitalists, you see, go back to being SBS. We're just out there doing good, and people should feed us for doing good.
So our existing business, we look and feel to the lending community very much like a broker. In fact, we actively try and do that. You know, we sign their brokerage terms. We deal with their intermediary specialists. And brokerage in the UK SME finance market, almost without exception, is a success fee-based model. So working capital loans, you will take typically a single-digit percentage of the principal as a commission on success from the lender. Commercial mortgages, because they're bigger, a much smaller percentage. Invoice finance, a percentage of the ongoing fee. But generally speaking, it's a success fee-based model.
So you're charging the lender, not the borrower?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, the lender will effectively just automatically pay us on success. Now, we think that the government referral scheme is going to need a different economic model, and that's what we intend to run.
Interesting. Sorry, brain working very slowly here, because the P2Ps, they charge the borrower, not the lender.
There's lots of different models out there. Right? If there's a push towards charging the borrower, it's only a matter of time before someone comes up with a new model that does it the other way around, right? Let's not beat around the bush. It's a very busy space. And actually, when I was starting up Funding Options, I more than once, probably about five times, I was sitting in front of potential investors, and halfway through, they're like, so you're not a peer-to-peer lender? And I said, no. And they're like, thank God.
That's brilliant.
You won't believe how many people in chinos with MBAs have come in and presented a peer-to-peer lender this week.
I didn't notice your chinos, but then I don't really look at sort of men's legs much these days. Or I never did in the first place, actually, other than when I was rowing, deciding who to put in the crew. So when did Funding Options start then?
Well, we started trading in, I guess, the middle of 2012, but obviously there was a period before that of setting up.
And you are an SME because you've got over 10 staff or something like that now?
Yeah, I mean, our staff is double figures, but we're still a relatively small company. Because we're trying to bring a technical aspect to this, I would hope that we're never going to be huge in terms of headcount. You know, we're trying to get away from what's currently a very manual market.
Where do you see the business going this year? I mean, obviously, there's this whole government thing and whether they give you a nice sort of stamp and use you or don't, life will go on one way or another. You know, what's the direction that you're trying to go in? Are you just trying to sort of scratch deeper and get more than 50 providers, or are you just trying to get more business to the platform?
I think the great challenge for Funding Options is we've established the model, we've demonstrated the need, we've got some great success stories. I mean, probably the thing I'm most proud of last year, we saved 100 jobs. In one case alone, we saved 100 jobs.
Wow, that is worth doing.
So, you know, we have actually shown the need, we've established that people need it. The great challenge that I face is we need to get our name out there more. So this needs to be our momentum year, where people start saying Funding Options is a matter of course. And, you know, success or failure, certainly in terms of how I will measure myself, will be by the end of this year, have we become a name that people think of and associate with the SME finance problem?
Yes, and it's very interesting because, I mean, I really like what you're doing and I can see it's very valuable. And not too many people, putting it mildly, would be on my sort of short list if I was the government. And I don't know anywhere near it what you do, but there aren't many out there. Whereas, for example, there are about 60 peer-to-peer lenders out there. That, you know, there's much more. And one of the problems that I've seen generically across the whole of fintech is that anything that's trying to interface to SME has got the sort of broadband equivalent of the last mile problem, which you can get to quite a long way, but actually then getting to whatever there are 5 million or 10 million SMEs out there is quite a difficult business development problem.
It absolutely is. And
that's why people are signing up with software packages and all that kind of stuff, trying to do FX brokerage.
This isn't just a comment on SME finance. This is a constant comment on the micro business segment generally, which are extraordinarily difficult to market to. And actually, I spent a number of years in a division of Barclays where this was a core issue we were trying to solve using the distribution capabilities of Barclays. Now, the reason small businesses are so difficult to get to is because direct marketing doesn't work. And the reason is because they're pretty price sensitive. They're individuals like you and me. So you may be able to charge twice as much for a mobile phone contract, but you can't charge 10 times as much. But guess what? There's 30 million consumers and there's 5 million SMEs. So spending money on TV adverts doesn't work. This is why you don't see TV adverts to small businesses. Very rare. Unless someone's got an insane amount of VC money. And then on the other hand, the small business segment is not homogenous. So consumers, you know, we all pretty much one piece. Whereas small businesses, you know, the challenges of a construction firm are fundamentally different from the challenges of a freelancer. How they finance themselves, how they do business, how they trade. So for that reason, you have a smaller segment that's not as homogenous, and any kind of direct marketing is very, very challenging.
Which perhaps goes back to, I mean, just thinking of sort of Dad's Army when I was a kid, and Captain Mannering as the archetypal old-fashioned business branch manager, which perhaps goes back to the fact about why, one of the reasons from business banking perspective anyway, why the banks had branches in the first case, is that Captain Mannering would know all the local businesses in Warmington on Sea, you know, Jones the Butcher and all that kind of stuff. So there would be that last mile connection. Now everybody's gone down this kind of tech route and trying to sort of live within the M25 and all that kind of thing. How do you connect with all the businesses in Scunthorpe? It's quite a challenge.
Yeah, well, I get very grumpy when people make this comment.
Oh, good.
Politicians make this comment all the time.
Excellent.
The captain.
I should be a politician.
Let me tell you why, okay? Small businesses aren't willing to pay for relationship banking.
Oh, they aren't anymore, but they were in the past because there was no option. There were no funding options in those days in Warmington, so you had to go to the
I'm not sure they were willing to pay. I think the reason that the model changed is because the economics didn't work. And I think small businesses aren't willing to pay. They say they want a relationship at a local level.
Yeah. Well, certainly nobody pays for advice. That's one of the problems. Come back to monetization.
You know the proof point, the exception that proves the rule is Handelsbanken, okay?
And let me explain why. Who are a brilliant bank.
Yeah, Handelsbanken is an amazing SME bank by, you know, every metric of customer satisfaction is off the charts. And their model is literally they lend to people that can see the church spire in the town, and the bank manager is the decision maker at a local level. They do traditional banking. And everyone says, well, that shows it works. It shows it doesn't work because they're very careful about who they do business with. If you're a builder with 100K turnover, not of interest. They are being very selective about the businesses that they will actually take on board as customers. They are bigger, more established, more exciting. So Handelsbanken, the exception that does relationship banking, is the exception that proves the rule. The economics don't work for small businesses.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, you've shut me up then.
Sorry, it wasn't my plan.
No. Well, it's a record, actually.
That's
an achievement. No. Well, I do like Handelsbanken, and occasionally I do get frustrated because people say, oh, banking is such a difficult problem, we don't know how to make it work. Handelsbanken is a very long-standing Swedish bank. It's kind of grown year on year. The staff get paid next to nothing, but it's the old-fashioned model that if you stay here 30 years, then you'll be relatively wealthy by the end of it. And they've really got the long-term incentives rather than all the sort of transactional stuff, and they've got a brilliant reputation, and everyone loves them, yada, yada, yada. I just didn't realise that if you drill down into the detail. But I suspect, to try and recover from a loss, but I think I'll just give you that point, I suspect that going back to Captain...
It's not a competition, Mike.
I know, life isn't a competition. It just doesn't matter as long as I win. It's going back to Captain Mannering that he wouldn't have lent to everybody in the old days. And that was kind of one of the bad things about the model. There's a kind of social control going on. You know,
that's why
Dad's Army is funny, because there's all this social snobbery.
So that's the other side of it, of course, is that the reason that the banks moved towards automated lending and, more important, centralised lending is because it was more predictive. So on the one hand, allegedly, the computer says no approach is actually more effective in terms of risk management. I don't know whether that's true. On the other hand, actually, is that if you think about it, then if you do delegate lending decisions down to the level of Captain Mannering, if Captain Mannering is racist or sexist, then actually the drivers of the lending decisions aren't necessarily going to be right. You know, if you're putting human emotions in control of a lending decision, it's not necessarily going to end up being good for society. So for those reasons, I'm not a huge fan of this, you know, we need to return to Captain Mannering banking.
Excellent. Well, I should have paid attention to my own notes, because we started with social political sciences, and you've sort of wrestled me to the ground on a social and political sciences point about Captain Mannering and Dad's Army. I'm thinking of a chum of mine who is a professor of sociology, and I'm quite good, as people on the podcast know, talking the hind leg off a donkey and pretending I know what I'm talking about, but you can never pin this guy to the ground, because he's just like a well-oiled Turkish wrestler. Whenever you think you've got him, he sort of slips out, so you've done a great job there. Just to wrap up on this point, though, in all seriousness, as I've mentioned before on the show, I don't flatter people because they're on the show, vice versa. More recently, because of Finovate, I've been getting 10 people a day coming to me wanting me on the show. I filter out what I think are really interesting prospects and really interesting businesses. And any SME out there, I really recommend you go and spend 5 or 10 minutes looking at Conrad's site and funding options, because I think it's very interesting, it's very clear, it's very simple, and it really adds value, and certainly is one of the ways that the government is considering getting away with this 40% problem, which is that 40% of the people go to one bank and then they give up if it doesn't work. So thanks for that, Conrad. Time's flown by, and good luck with the government and good luck with the business in general.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Excellent. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on iTunes or your podcast app, or sign up at londonfintechpodcast.com for email alerts and new episodes. Live long and prosper.
Could sit and bend there all day, Watching the firelight dance, watching the firelight dance. We could walk in the mountains before dawn, watching a happy moon ride, watching a happy moon ride. Come away from the city, with the tarmac so dead and the people so sad. Come away from the city, with the faces so gray, with the pain of the the mountains and the trees. Can you see what I mean? Can you see what I mean? We fit in between the earth and the sky. Kiss the city goodbye, wave the city goodbye, wave the city goodbye, city goodbye. Watch the firelight dance with me, 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 watch the firelight.